Experts say artificial intelligence could effectively disrupt healthcare by predicting illnesses and also picking the best treatments, all while doing away with a lot of paperwork. Our guest is at the center of the promise and worry about AI and healthcare.
You use the term self-regulatory. That's absolutely, I think, a fair term to use. These are vendors and customers coming together, coming up with guidelines and guardrails that they see as helpful for the work they're doing in the private sector. If state or federal officials want to make use of those, you know, that's their call.
Dr. Brian Anderson is an internationally recognized author and expert in digital health innovation and health standards. Now he's in charge of the Coalition for Health AI, which aims to provide guidelines for the responsible use of AI.
There are a lot of challenges in the AI ecosystem right now. One of them certainly is trust in the healthcare space. You look at survey after survey, people broadly in society don't trust AI with really consequential decisions like those that we face in healthcare.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Dr. Anderson, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you know, you've been full-time in your role for almost a year. And let's start with having you describe the Coalition for Health AI. Who's in the coalition and what are your goals?
Yeah, so CHAI, or Coalition for Health AI, we started in the middle of the pandemic, actually, in March of 2021 as a coalition of the willing. At the time, many of us were working in Operation Warp Speed and on the White House COVID Task Force, focused, of course, in the pandemic. But you had very non-traditional partners. You had, you know, very competitive pharmaceutical companies, you had health systems, you had big tech companies and small tech companies all coming together. And we appreciated the impact that we were having in that space. And one of the questions we asked is, there something more that we can be doing beyond the pandemic? We looked at AI. And one of the first questions we asked was, do we have consensus at a technically specific level that informs what responsible AI looks like for a developer, for a health system, or a payer deploying it, and for the governance of an AI model over its lifetime? And the answer we quickly came to is, we don't. We have a lot of really good work happening at various organizations and companies. And we thought that, you know, in a consequential space like health, that it's important to have consensus on what, you know, what good, responsible, trustworthy AI looks like. And so that's really been our focus, is building a private sector led coalition to build those technical best practice frameworks for the industry to align on to accelerate the kinds of innovation and development of AI, building trust between vendors and their customers like health systems, to deploy and use these AI technologies to improve patient outcomes and care. It really quickly grew from the 8 organizations that we started in March of 21 to now we have nearly 3,000 different organizations that are part of CHAI. I think it's probably the largest health AI coalition on the planet. Our focus remains the same, though. It's building that technical consensus, best practice frameworks, enabling vendors and their customers to come together to accelerate innovation, to be able to test and validate models, to build the kind of trust, to have common agreements on the kind of transparency that many doctors and nurses and patients want, and doing that in a private sector led way.
Well, one of your coalition's accomplishments has been the release of a draft framework for responsible health AI. And the framework, I understand, includes an assurance standards guide, which is aiming to create standards for AI in healthcare. I'll just say right off the bat, you took on a pretty big challenge when you took on this work, trying to get consensus around standards is one of the more challenging things we try to do sometimes in healthcare. But fill us in more on what the framework is all about and any specific examples of your draft framework about those assurance standards or the guide to assurance standards.
Yeah, well, let me start with one of the kind of the very basic principles in responsible AI, which is transparency. The example or metaphor I like to use is when you and I go to a grocery store and we, you know, look to buy a can of soup and we want to know what's in it, we turn around the can of soup, we look behind and we see the nutrition label and we know, you know, how many carbohydrates, how much protein, how much fat is in it, what the ingredients are. We have that kind of understanding because we have an expectation of the transparency that we get to know about the things that we're going to be buying at a grocery store. One of the challenges in AI, and in particular in responsible AI, is a common agreement on the level of transparency for the customers of AI in partnership with vendors to understand how these models are built. what kind of data sets were the models trained on? As a physician myself, I might be very concerned about knowing if a model was trained on a particular kind of patient that I might have in front of me. Was it trained on this kind of patient? Is it appropriate for the patient that I have in front of me? Not having that kind of transparency, not having that assurance that these models are trained on the kinds of people that I, as a physician or a nurse, might be serving, is a real challenge to building the kind of trust. And so when we did this work, we brought together the vendor community, so big tech companies and small startups, as well as their customers, namely health systems and payers and health plans, and said, okay, what is the minimum threshold of transparency from a responsible AI standpoint that the vendors and their customers can agree to in what we've now called an AI nutrition label or our model card, that is that base level of answering questions like, what's in it? What are the data sets used? What are the indications? What are the limitations of using these kinds of model? And so it's that kind of hard work, building to a technical level of specificity. So getting from the 50,000 foot, you know, we all want transparency, we all want safety, but what does it actually look like? And so that's the work that we've been focused on. That's some of the examples in the assurance standards guide.
We've certainly already seen examples reported of people going down the wrong diagnostic pathway because it turned out it had never been fed information on different genders or different ages or different backgrounds. So that is really impressive. Thanks.
I'm just a little confused. Is this about self-regulation or is this a crosswalk over to government regulation? And is this group that you have only within the confines of the U.S. or does it cover, is it a global alliance that's been built up? We can all go to our app and grab something that's from, you know, the other side of the globe and start using it. So where do you go with this framework in terms of the regulatory, or is this really about the industry itself self-regulating?
Great question, Mark. So when we started Chai, it started as a private sector-led effort. And it quickly, I think, got the attention of the previous administration. And I think many of us in Chai appreciated that in a rapidly evolving space like AI and health AI in specific, we want our policymakers and regulators to be informed about where the innovation community is moving, what some of these technical standards and best practice frameworks are that we're developing. And so we invited them to be part of our working groups. We invited them to be part of our community. And to this day, you know, we have active engagement from officials from the FDA, from ONC, from NIH, from VA. And they are there to learn where the private sector is moving in this space. And, you know, certainly as they want to inform regulations and develop them, you know, they, of course, are able to do that. They do that separately from Chai, though. I would say, you know, where the at a federal or state level, they want to use some of the principles or concepts that we're developing in Chai, you know, I think that we're more than happy to help them and educate them. I tell many of the legislators, both at the federal level and state level, you know, to see Chai as an educational resource.
So it's a toolkit that people can grab onto and apply where they think it's necessary, but you don't have as a directive really looking at this as a legislative vehicle, though somebody might interpret it and use it as they so chose at a state level.
That's right. So the work that we're doing with Assurance Labs is purely a private sector. You use the term self-regulatory. That's absolutely, I think, a fair term to use. These are vendors and customers coming together, coming up with guidelines and guardrails that they see as helpful for the work they're doing in the private sector. If state or federal officials want to make use of those, you know, that's their call, and, you know, happy to educate them on the capabilities of some of the things we're working on, but that's their job, not ours.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. And I wonder if you want to comment on this. There's obviously the whole business component. If you're in healthcare, you said that you're a physician, you certify your lab, you certify the equipment that you use, you certify your electronic health record, and that stands for something. So is there a business model being developed around this that would give patients and providers more confidence in the safety of the information that is being used in their care?
Exactly right, Margaret. I think that's the hope, is if you look at any other sector of consequence in the U.S. economy, there are independent entities that come up with standards or best practices. There are independent entities that do the kind of external evaluation of, you know, an airplane, a car, a consumer electrical device, a toaster oven that we put in our home, do that kind of evaluation independently and issue reports that are publicly available. In this case, those kinds of evaluations and reports within the CHAI ecosystem, we intend to make those available to doctors, to nurses, to hospital administrators, the public writ large. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. I think one of the ways that we build greater trust in AI is the kind of transparency about how these things actually perform by independent, trusted entities. I think there are a lot of challenges in the AI ecosystem right now. One of them certainly is trust in the healthcare space. You look at survey after survey, people broadly in society don't trust AI with really consequential decisions like those that we face in healthcare.
I wonder if it's like Congress. I don't like Congress, but I like my congressman. I'm wondering on AI, is it that I have an app that I kind of like and I use it, but pox on all of them. But I do want to get back to the sort of issue of cost. And we've seen the market upheaval happening when new products come out online that could potentially train AI tools at a much lower cost than had previously been predicted. I'm wondering about your cost structure. What do you see the cost for somebody adopting your standards here in terms of what it might mean for their AI product?
So we've tried to make the standards and best practice frameworks as adoptable and accessible as possible. So an example, there are startups in our community. There are big tech companies in our community. And what we don't want is to create playbooks that only a entrenched incumbent that has, you know, a massive army of, you know, developers could possibly meet every, you know, item on the checklist. We want to create playbooks that are accessible, that are deployable and usable across all of the important stakeholders that we have. And so, you know, that's been our intention since we started, is to develop these frameworks in such a way that it's not going to be cost prohibitive. It's not going to slow down innovation. Example, like one of the reasons why we've launched these labs is because if you ask any startup out there, particularly in the health space, what's the number one challenge to developing a, you know, effective product? It's access to data. It's sometimes very cost prohibitive, and it's challenging to get access to that kind of data. And so these labs and the ecosystem that we're creating enables researchers to have that kind of more easy access to high quality data. Now, on the health system side, you know, there are lots of questions about, you know, how much is appropriate to spend on an AI tool? How do I measure the economic ROI once I buy it and deploy it? Is it going to create the kind of efficiency that I need to recoup the cost that I've, you know, given for the purchasing of the model? That is another separate part of our work, is partnering with health systems and vendors to understand, like, what are the agreed upon metrics and evaluation framework to determine if a model is actually going to give an ROI back to the health system. That, you know, these health systems all have very thin margins, and there's a lot of questions on the cost of the model and if there's going to be an economic ROI. And we want to work with our community to develop the frameworks to get greater clarity to that very important question.
Well, I'm curious, and maybe in a different area, but do your efforts tie in with President Trump's Stargate announcement that aims to highlight AI's ability to transform healthcare by reaching the holy grail of helping to develop a cancer vaccine?
Well, so I can start by saying certainly the main parties in Operation Stargate, so OpenAI, Oracle, are part of CHAI. And so we work very closely with them as founding partners of the Coalition for Health AI. Now, Stargate, as I'm sure probably you and your listeners are aware, is focused mostly on investment on the technical infrastructure. So data centers, GPUs, and the infrastructure that you need to build these massive frontier models. Now, in the Gen AI space, particularly in healthcare, there is a lot of interest in using models for a variety of use cases. AI scribes to help doctors and nurses in seeing patients, so they're not staring at a computer, they're actually making eye contact with their patients, mm-hmm. is a great example in the generative AI space, where many of the vendors work with OpenAI and work with an EHR like Oracle Health's EHR to do that important work. So I would say the work in Chai is definitely aligned with and part of what is what I would call the end result of what Oracle, OpenAI, and SoftBank are looking to do, which is to build highly capable, effective models to help address, you know, things like helping to solve cancer. There are many community members in Chai that are focused in the oncology or the cancer space. So we're excited to see where that goes, where these, you know, more capable generative AI models can help solve, you know, some of the urgent questions and challenges we have in the cancer space.
And Dr. Anderson, I'm wondering, there's been some criticism of your group, and it's mostly centered around the idea that the coalition is policing itself. You mentioned that you had OpenAI and Oracle. You also have Microsoft and Google. I'm wondering, how do you respond to those points that are being made?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that question. When Chai launched, it was started by a group of doctors in the private sector. And it was clear that we had a vision and a goal that was, I think, deeply resonant with the broader ecosystem. So yes, all of the big companies that people recognize the names of, you know, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon, some of the biggest health systems in the US are all part of Chai. But at the same time, over 25% of our members are startups with less than 50 employees. It's going to take all of us to solve a lot of these challenges in this space. And so, although, yes, we have all of the name brands that people recognize, like OpenAI and others, we also have a lot more names of organizations that people don't recognize. And in Chai, the way governance works in our working groups is each organization gets one vote. So it's not like any of the, you know, recognized names get more votes than any one startup. And so, you know, candidly, the way governance works in Chai is it's heavily weighted towards the startup community, where they are the ones that are able to drive the consensus work that we're doing. And it's, you know, not the Microsoft or the Amazon or the Google that's able to do that. Although those are, of course, important partners. All of our community members are equally important in that sense. It is a private sector led effort, though, Mark. And so you're right. Like, this is private sector innovators coming together, trying to develop consensus. But I would say, importantly, it's the vendor community and the customer community, which have very different equities and very different, you know, priorities. Like the transparency example I give you as an important one of developing some of those guidelines and guardrails. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the other really important community is the patient community advocate community. Every one of our working groups has a patient community advocate that is part of it, that is helping to lead it. And so their voice is equally important and central to these consensus standards and best practice frameworks that we're developing.
That's a very important point. Thanks.
Well, it's a very impressive list of people, and I'm so glad you added the patient's voice, which is critical to research. You know, the one group that you didn't mention is government, and I'm wondering, what is the role for government at the table? Are the folks from FDA or any other government agencies at the table in the discussions or contributing to the standards?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I was sharing earlier, with the previous administration, we had active engagement in all of our working groups from FDA, ONCA, STP, NIH, VA, OCR, Office of Civil Rights, and a number of other, you know, word salad acronym government agencies. I've shared with the Trump administration and with legislators on the Hill that the same invitation stands to the current administration. Uh-huh. And we welcome participation and engagement. I think it is really important for our policymakers and our regulators, regardless of what party they're from, to know where the private sector is going, so that if they are going to form regulation or policy, that it's not being done in a ham-handed, misinformed way. Right. We want them to develop regulations cognizant of where the industry is going and where innovation is going. And I think that's good for all of us.
I was just wondering about the politics of it. And obviously, the Biden administration is in the rearview mirror for the Trump administration, and they're looking forward, certainly bypassing some of the proposals that the Biden administration had laid out. which were generally viewed not as onerous, more sort of guidelines. I'm thinking about what we've learned from the EU, or certainly I heard the Prime Minister in England talking about AI being one of their engines for it. What are you seeing on the international arena in terms of the pathways that people are taking to address the opportunity that AI presents?
Yeah, so no, great question. And sorry, I didn't answer it earlier when you asked about the international engagement. So when Chai started, we focused domestically. I think that was just the initial space that we wanted to really begin building out some of these consensus frameworks. And so last year, 2024, focused solely on the domestic front. This year, very different. Many of our partners have asked us to engage with the EU, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, which works closely with the G20 and the EU, has engaged with Chai and asked us to begin developing towards a summit later this year that will look to engage the European Union and really take as an example some of the unique policies in the EU, GDPR as an example. And take the frameworks that we're developing in Chai and crosswalk that into the regulatory reality and frameworks that many of our multinational companies have to deal with every day. So how do you, as a multinational company that's both in the US and in Denmark or Germany or Britain, develop models, deploy models, govern models in a way that is adherent to those regulations and the policies in those nations? And so Chai will actually be launching that work, I think in Q1 or Q2 of this year, and partnering with the international community. We're also going to be working very closely with Singapore, and we will have some exciting announcements to share later in March about that.
I know the in the States, at least, there's the FCEB, which are all the federal agencies that are focused in on this and wondering, we have at the present moment some disruption between the ability to communicate with those agencies. But the federal government at least has a platform that has gathered all of those agencies. I'm wondering how your relationship is with that body as well.
In terms of the pause in communication? Is that referring to Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, so that news just broke, I think, in the last 24, 48 hours. So we're certainly wanting to be respectful of President Trump and the administration's desire to put things on pause. And so a lot of the engagements that we've had this week in terms of, attending community of practice meetings, speaking to various officials within HHS agencies, all of that has been put on pause. And so we're waiting to hear back from them. I mean, and candidly, it's not a rush. I mean, happy to speak with the government officials when it's helpful and when it's appropriate and when they want us to. Certainly on the private sector side, our working groups are meeting daily, and the work that we're advancing, continues. That's not going to be put on pause.
Well, as you know, I think Mark and I work in the community health center space, both with the organization we lead, but also the network of community health centers around the country that take care of about 31 million people. I've noticed in reading some of the background material, so much of your discussions are focused on big tech and big healthcare systems. You talked about the patient voice now. Are you trying to bring in community health centers, safety net hospitals, and others who are really focused on the more vulnerable populations to this work?
Absolutely. So thank you for asking that question, Margaret. I would say, certainly last year we learned a lot. And I think one of the, if I'm being honest with myself, one of the maybe appropriate criticisms of Chai and the work that we did was that it was very technical and it was very detailed. We published a responsible AI guide that's 187 pages long. And so that can be a challenge if you're a small community health center looking to deploy AI in a responsible way. And so I think we've heard that criticism. I've taken that to heart. And so this year, we're going to be focusing on a major strategic effort, working with federally qualified health centers, community health centers across the nation to take the body of work that we've created over the past several years and develop playbooks that are much more accessible and usable to the lower resourced community centers, be them in rural Appalachia or, inner city LA. I think one of the exciting kind of, milestones towards that is I can share with you, you know, for the first time publicly here, is we're sharing that Dr. Q Ri, who's the CEO of the National Association for Community Health Centers, is joining our board of directors. And so with Q's leadership, our team will be launching a specific working group effort that will bring in, you know, approximately a dozen FQHCs and community health centers to do what I just said, to take the work that we've developed and build with them the kinds of playbooks and tooling that enables them to make use of AI tools in a responsible way. So we're really excited about that. And the hope is to bring this kind of content and make it available to as many rural clinics, you know, urban clinics in the United States.
Well, congratulations. That's a very exciting initiative.
Thanks for sharing
and as a physician, I think one of the things you worry most about, and I think the health centers do, and I'm sure all of your other partners do, is what's the best advice for patients as they're dealing with AI? I think the big question is, should they trust it? And how transparent should healthcare providers be about its use? And again, just thinking about from wearing the shoes of a patient.
So, I mean, I can give you my personal opinion on this. I think that health systems and doctors should be as transparent as possible in the use of AI with their patients. AI is a tool. And as a physician, you know, there's this principle of informed consent, right? So in terms of how we treat our patients, we inform them of the various kinds of procedures we're doing, the risks, the benefits, the potential harm that comes to them in the use of any tool or any procedure. And I think the same principle applies here. I mean, although it's less clear cut, because as a provider, I don't necessarily inform a patient if I'm going to be using a stethoscope or an ophthalmoscope or an otoscope, which are also tools that I might use. AI as a tool, I think, might have more consequentiality to it than a stethoscope or an otoscope might. And so I do think that there is a rationale that many providers share with me that we should be informing our patients and should be having those kinds of informed conversations with our patient if they want.
Aren't they sitting on the other side of you with their own AI device saying, let me check.
Too. No, I mean, I think the reality is patients are using these tools right now, every day.
Absolutely.
And providers need to take that information that the patients oftentimes are bringing to them seriously. I mean, there are many stories out there of patients that, you know, went to a doctor, doctor didn't know what to do. The patient took their, you know, medical record back to ChatGPT. And then suddenly, you know, they have a diagnosis, they bring it back to the provider and the provider is like, you know, of course, that's the diagnosis. So we need to be partnering with our patients in using these tools appropriately. I think the one caution I would offer is sharing your private medical record with any of these online tools means that you are consenting to share your private information with a company.
That's a great point.
And just being aware of that.
Well, I have to ask you, since you said that you started all this work 2020, 2021. So, you know, we are always living in interesting times, it seems, but that was certainly interesting as we come up on the fifth anniversary of the start of COVID. But you work closely, I understand, with the White House COVID Task Force and with Operation Warp Speed. I'm wondering if there's any lessons that you learned in these roles that you are having to put to good use now in moving your coalition forward.
Yeah, well, certainly lots of lessons on that. Being comfortable with ambiguity, I think, is one of the biggest lessons I learned in that time. In COVID, you know, we didn't know which therapies were going to work. We didn't, you know, understand how people and why people were dying when this started. And yet we still worked hard every day to try to get to the answers. I think very similarly in the AI space, we have a bunch of theories on how to develop models, how to develop capable models. We have a hope that AGI, you know, is going to help solve a lot of the, you know, potential problems and challenges in health and research. I think being comfortable that we don't necessarily have all the answers and having a level of humility around that is really important. The DeepSeek news that broke just the other day is a great example of, you know, you have a bunch of, I think, very smart and talented developers that had initially an understanding of, you know, this is the best way to train, you know, highly capable generative AI frontier models. And that still may be the case, But we have a level of uncertainty now with, you know, the R1 DeepSeek model that came out. And so I think ambiguity and being comfortable with that is one. I think the other challenge is, or the other lesson I've learned is, building alignment of incentives is so critically important, particularly when you have inherently competitive organizations, right? To have a group of technology companies all working collaboratively is not easy. Mm-hmm. Having an aligned incentive of, hey, if we can come to consensus around an industry set of best practices, mm-hmm. we can use that as a framework to accelerate innovation, not slow it down. And so getting people aligned, as an example, with that kind of incentive is how you build a coalition with inherently competitive organizations. And so those are just two examples of lessons learned from the pandemic.
Great. And probably more to come.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Dr. Anderson, for joining us and for the important work that you're doing. And thanks to our audience for being here. Just a reminder to be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube and find us on Facebook and X with our account name CHC Radio. And as always, you can go online at chcradio.com to sign up for email updates, and you can share your thoughts and comments about this program. Thank you again, Dr. Anderson, and continued success. We'll be following your work.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.